It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The total number of Pittsburghers living at or near the poverty level has increased nearly 9% since the start of the Great Recession in the fall of 2007. And according to the documentary Inequality for All, nearly one half of all Americans have zero wealth, no savings, no assets that outweigh their debts, no retirement savings or investments. The film grew out of the economic lectures of Robert Reich at the University of California at Berkeley. Dr. Reich has served in three national administrations, most recently as Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton. He's written 12 books, including The Work of Nations, and his film, Equality for All, is showing for free on Monday, November 18th at 6:15 p.m. at McConomy Auditorium on the Carnegie Mellon University campus. He joins us now by phone from San Francisco. Robert Reich, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me, Paul.
This film, to some, may sound a bit like one involving one of your colleagues in the Clinton administration, Al Gore, who gave us An Inconvenient Truth. Is that a fair comparison?
Well, I'm much funnier than Al Gore.
So I've heard.
It's a fair comparison in the sense that, yes, the film did grow out of a series of lectures I've given on why inequality is widening, what we can do about it. But the director, Jake Kornbluth, has made the film marvelously entertaining. Now, I didn't know what Rotten Tomatoes was or is. That shows you how out of it I am. But people tell me it has a 91% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which apparently is pretty damn good in terms of reviews of the film. And it's in over 100 theaters around the country. People are writing and calling me, emailing and saying that they really have found it extraordinarily important, useful, funny, and very poignant.
As you developed your approach to instructing students at Berkeley, what were the concepts and the ideas that you felt were most important for them to grasp?
Well, the most important thing is that we've got to get out of the blame game that we are now in. The problem of the economy, and by the way, most Americans are still in the Great Recession. Most Americans, in terms of the precariousness of their jobs or lack of jobs or their wages dropping or their benefits disappearing, most Americans are still on the downward escalator. 95% of all of the economic gains since the recovery began have gone to the top 1%. And the typical family and typical household are actually worse off than they were when the recovery began in 2009. So we face a huge, huge problem, but it's not a matter of blaming the poor or blaming immigrants or blaming the rich or blaming corporations or blaming government or blaming unions. It's actually, and it has to do with the way the system is organized. And what I tell my students and what I really hope people get out of the film is an understanding of what has to be changed in terms of the organization of our economy to generate more broad-based prosperity.
And how did your lectures end up becoming the film Inequality for All? Who was watching you and said, we've got to put this on film, we've got to put him on the big screen?
Well, actually, a young director, Jake Kornbluth, came to me a couple years ago, and he had not been in the lectures, but he had read a recent book of mine called Aftershock, The Next Economy in America's Future. He said it changed the way he was thinking about a whole bunch of things. It connected a lot of dots that he did not understand how they were connected, and he wanted to make a movie about it. He had made several movies before. He wanted to make a documentary. I was naive. You know, I said, sure, not knowing how much work would be necessary. And once we got into it, I suggested him that he come to my class. It's a big class in Berkeley. It has about 800 students. And because I thought that would be a way of enabling him to see how the film might be crafted. Not to take, you know, I obviously, nobody wants to sit through a series of lectures on the big screen, and that's not what he intended, and it's not what I intended, but the lectures form a kind of backdrop to the movie. And he interviews a lot of people. There are a lot of charts, animated graphs. He uses my life in ways that I, frankly, was a little uncomfortable with, but he said it was important for people to relate to the messenger. And I think that's why people have felt that the movie speaks to them.
Can you give us an example of something you were uncomfortable with?
Well, I can. For example, I'm very short, and I used to, when I was a kid, get molested and beat up a lot by bigger kids, and getting beat up and getting bullied is not unusual, but I was so short and I was so bullied so often that I came up with an idea. That is, I would make alliances with even older boys who would protect me, kind of the original protection racket. And one of those older boys who was my protector in the summers turned out to, well, this is something I had never shared with anybody before, certainly not publicly. His name was Michael Schwerner. And in the summer of 1964, long after he had been my protector, he was registering voters in Mississippi. And he and two other civil rights workers were brutally murdered by the real bullies. I mean, white supremacists who would stop at nothing. And when I heard about that, it was my freshman year of college, it changed my life. I realized at a very emotional level that there were a lot of people in America and indeed around the world who were being bullied and brutalized economically. They had nobody to protect them. And unless we got serious, not only about civil rights, but about making the economy work for all of us, it was going to get more and more brutal. And that revelation was hard for me to share, honestly. I had not done it before, but it was so central to my own personal story that Jake used it very sensitively, didn't exploit me or the story, and wove a lot of other of my kind of my own personal journey, a lot of other incidents and a lot of other aspects of that journey into a film about where America has been over the last 35 years and where it is going and what is happening to average people.
We're talking with former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich about his film Inequality for All here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Economic disparity in the United States is ever growing. The gap, as you know, between the richest 1% and the rest of America is the widest that it's been since the Roaring Twenties. And the very wealthiest Americans earned more than 19% of the country's household income last year. It sounds like the days of the robber barons, as Teddy Roosevelt called them. Why is this happening?
Well, it's happening around the world, not just in the United States. And it's happening largely because of globalization and technological change that allows a lot of jobs to be done by computers and robots that used to be done by people. But different countries have really done much better jobs than the United States in controlling the effects of globalization and technological change and not letting those forces reduce prosperity and widen the divide nearly as wide as it has become in the United States. Of all rich countries, indeed, of all major countries, we have the greatest degree of inequality. Since the beginning of the recovery, as I mentioned before, 95% of all economic gains have gone to the very top. We didn't have this kind of an economy in the 1950s, 60s, or early 1970s. Much of this began in the late 70s, but we didn't do anything about it. And I count myself as guilty because I was Secretary of Labor for Bill Clinton in the 1990s. It was a very good economy overall, but these deeper structural problems were not addressed nearly as much as they should be. I was frustrated. I was, as I say in the movie, I made a real pain of myself in that administration because I thought we didn't do enough.
Union membership has declined dramatically. We looked at this on a recent program. How much does that have to do with economic and income disparity?
It has to do with a lot because unions in the 1950s really represented over a third of American workers. And that gave workers the bargaining power they needed to get a fair share of the fruits of economic growth. Now that unions represent fewer than 7% of private sector workers, they don't have that kind of power. Workers don't have the power to get a share of economic growth. But it's not just the decline of unions, Paul. It's also the decline of our commitment to public education. Public higher education, for example, in the 1960s and 70s, was very often free of charge, or even if it was charged in terms of tuition, it was rock bottom. It was easily affordable by kids from working-class families and poor families and the lower middle class. That's not the case today. Our schools in the 1950s and 60s, we invested substantially in making sure that they were excellent. We had a highway building program that was the biggest infrastructure program in the world, the National Defense Highway Act, that's responsible even today for the interstate highway system. We had a tax system that was far more progressive than it is today. Under Dwight Eisenhower, the top marginal tax rate on the richest Americans was 91%. And Dwight Eisenhower was not a Democrat. He was a Republican, a former general. We had regulations on Wall Street that prevented Wall Street from going crazy, that made sure that Wall Street was boring, that investment banking was doing what it should be doing. And we had strictures against huge amounts of money coming into American politics and poisoning our system. Well, we've turned our back on all of this, and we are suffering as a result.
Dr. Rice, you said back in 2008 that the $700 million bailout should be directed toward homeowners, small businesses, and college loans. If that had happened 5 years ago, where would we be today?
We'd be better off than we are today. The middle class, lower middle class, and working class would be far better off. That original bailout was supposed to have helped homeowners who suddenly discovered that they were underwater, where their houses were worth suddenly less than they owed on those houses. We have now college students who have extraordinary debt, and they're coming into a job market that is still terrible for young people. We bailed out the banks, but we didn't help the people who genuinely needed to be helped, and if you want, bailed out, although they got into the position they were in, underwater homeowners and students and many people whose retirement savings have shrunk to nothing, not because of any fault of their own, but because of an economy that suddenly plunged, largely because of the excesses on Wall Street.
How would you assess the Obama administration's handling of the economy?
I'd give the Obama administration a B-minus, maybe a C-plus. I understand that the administration has been constrained. It's very difficult working in Washington because it is gridlock. It is very, very partisan. It's almost impossible to get anything done. But nonetheless, it is amazing to me that most of America is still in the Great Recession. We still have a huge job problem. Wages are dropping for most people, and their benefits are declining. And yet, you would think if you went to Washington, as I unfortunately often have to do, you'd think that none of this was happening. There's a huge disconnect between Washington and the rest of this country in terms of jobs and wages and what average working people are going through.
One critical review of your film calls you out for not being radical enough, complaining that you are basically a Keynesian who would like taxes raised on the rich with the money spent to rebuild infrastructure, thus providing middle-class jobs, and for romanticizing the post-war period during which inequality in the U.S. was the lowest on record. What is your response to that piece of criticism?
I think that's great. I mean, the more I'm criticized from the left and the right, the more I feel like I'm right on track. As I said before, Paul, the reviews have been overall extraordinary. I mean, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes is apparently really amazing.
That's a good thing.
And yes, it is a good thing. It shows that 91% of the reviews, or more than 90% of the reviews, have been extremely positive. So if there are people on and reviewers on the left or the right who don't like it, that's inevitable. The film is an attempt to get people out of their ideological boxes, just as I try to do with my books and my teaching. Really, we shouldn't be limited by these labels, Democrat or Republican or right or left. America has shown itself in the progressive era, early 20th century, and then again in the 30s, and then again in the 1960s, and to a limited extent in the 90s, as being a very pragmatic nation, able to roll up our sleeves and get on with whatever happens to be done. And I think that we are turning a corner. I think Bill de Blasio's election, that landslide victory in New York, when he really did run on this issue of two Americas, two New Yorks, widening inequality, raise taxes on the top to provide better schools and better preschool and after-school programs, he is not an outlier. I think we're going to see much more of that in coming years.
And aside from wanting people to step outside of their boxes, as you put it, above all else, what do you want people to take away from Inequality for All?
Mostly, I want them to understand that this is the most important domestic issue of our time, and insist when it comes to the next presidential election in 2016 that candidates, both Democratic and Republican candidates, address it, make it the centerpiece of their domestic agenda. And again, there's not a magic bullet. I don't want people to think that this can be turned around immediately, but it's bad for everybody. Inequality for all is bad for everyone. The rich would do better with a smaller share of a rapidly growing economy because people had more widespread prosperity, were able to lead better lives than the rich are doing now with a large share of an economy that's almost dead in the water. This is not a zero-sum game. The economy never has been. The rising tide lifts all boats. That's what it used to do, and it will do again if we get back on track, and I'm sure we can if people understand the nature of the problem. So that's what this film is all about.
And there's a bit of Oscar buzz in the air about it. What are your thoughts about some of the acclaim that you're getting and some of the potential awards that are out there?
This has come as a big surprise to me so far. I never thought we'd get in the Sundance Film Festival. Not only did we get in, but we got the Special Jury Award. I never thought the film would be picked up by, or even that there'd be a bidding contest among major distributors, including Harvey Weinstein, to distribute the films. I am flabbergasted that the film has already attracted as much attention as it has, and the fact that there's even a little buzz about the possibility of an Oscar is beyond my comprehension.
My guest has been former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich, who is at the center of the film Inequality for All. It is showing on Monday night. That's November 18th, 6:15 at McConomy Auditorium on the Carnegie Mellon University campus. And as part of the presentation, Robert Reich will be Skyping in for questions and answers with members of the audience. Robert Reich has joined us by phone from San Francisco. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Paul.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up on 90.5 WESA.